Deal comes CEO at Phrase. I've been here since April 2022 and very much enjoying the language industry, the company Phrase. It's a fantastic place and exciting one to be.
Hello and welcome to Localization Today. My name is Eddie Arrieta. I'm the CEO here at Multilingual Magazine. And today I have the privilege to talk with Georg Elm, the CEO of Phrase. Georg, thank you so much and welcome. Thank you. And of course, you've come at a time of a significant change for our industry, for the company. Can you tell us what have been your biggest priorities as CEO? How are those shaping Phrase's direction and culture?
Yeah, I think the first one is common to all CEOs is to shape the culture and the vision of the company. And being respectful of the past, because Phrase is a business that existed before I got there, but also thinking very much about how we take it forward into the future. So we wanted to build a culture across the organization of like being very customer oriented, having high humility in our work, but also a lot of ambition and pride in our work, and ultimately being a good partner to the industry. So being a great partner to our customers, to our partners, whether those are LSPs or LSIs, or technology partners. And then, of course, to be a fantastic place to work. So culture and vision, I think, is really important. The second priority has been developing our platform vision and really building a platform company, which has lots of implications, again, culture, but also product and go-to-market. And then finally, I think one of the things that the CEO does is set the tone inside a company, in every company. And I think it's fair to say that at Phrase, we have a very strong drive for continuous improvement, whether that's self, team, or company. And I think that's evident to everybody at Phrase and also to the people we work with.
Thank you. And of course, as we've mentioned earlier, we are in a significant time of change. How do you approach leading through change, especially when balancing innovation, scale, and customer trust?
Yeah, I think it's it starts with being very transparent and being as transparent as you possibly can be. So, for example, I'm very transparent about our company strategy, about what kind of company we are, which is a technology business, what kind of company we are not, which is a services business, and the difference between those two and why we'll always be one and not the other. And it's interesting because people tell stories about you, like your competitors tell stories about you, and then you have to sort of correct the record and be very clear about what you do stand for. And I've been on record with that. I also am pretty open about our strategy because I don't believe that it can be easily copied. And I think it's healthier to be transparent about it to customers and prospective customers. And then they kind of know what direction you're going in. They can make decisions accordingly. I also think part of my leadership style for us as a business is to be really open to ideas from absolutely anywhere. So they can come from friendly conversations with the industry at events. They can come from our customers. They can come from our partners. They can come from our team. They can come from random conversations you've had at home or something you've read on the internet, and you bring it back to work and you think, this is interesting. And I think having that openness to new ideas is very important for us in a period of change. The customer orientation is key. And I think having, as I said earlier, that humility to understand the role that we play, which is important, but is not the be all and end all for customers, and actually collaborating well with others to bring the best solutions to customers, I think that's something that is very important for us. And look, the last thing might sound like a soft skill, but I think it's really important. It's being optimistic. You know, I think the CEO's job is to lead. You lead from the front, and you have to give people a positive vision for change and embracing change. And actually, if you're in technology and you're not embracing change, well, relatively at least, you're going backwards. So, you know, I have always been a techno-optimist. I continue to be. I think it's one of the most exciting times to be in technology generally and in language specifically. And so I think for us as a business, whether that's internally or externally, being positive, being optimistic, embracing change and actually manifesting, like driving the direction of the changes, is really important, and not being swept along. And
thank you. I think that's going to be really important for our audience to listen to. And of course, Phrase has undergone significant changes this year, including specifically expanded into multimedia capabilities. Could you tell us how does this reflect your strategic direction?
Yeah, I think it's very natural for us, actually. So if you go on my LinkedIn profile, I pinned at the top a video I did 2 years ago, which you know, I'll be hoisted by that one way or the other, because I gave a 5-year vision 2 years ago and I was almost nervous to do it because I wasn't sure if anyone would really necessarily sort of care what I thought. But anyway, I put it up there and it's actually been really useful. It's a clarifying exercise for me and for the company. And it turned out to be more important than perhaps I realized to give that clarity to lots of people. And it is about hyper automation driving hyper personalization, driving hyper volumes and scale, meaning that if companies can confidently use AI on a use case by use case by use case basis, then each new use case where the AI confidence breaches the acceptable threshold, the volume goes up dramatically, because you don't use AI for little bits here and there. When you get confident in it, you use it to do a lot. So if you can do personalization at the limit of technical capability and technological confidence, then in the, you know, over time, you do personalization at massive scale because you do it at that limit. And so actually for us to move into multimodal was relatively natural, because it's part of an extension of this movement towards a kind of high scale and even ephemeral internet and content strategy. So by ephemeral, I mean that content can be personalized and streamed to the user and may then not exist after that. It may never exist again in that format. So it might be that you get a version of a piece of content which you consume and then disappears, and it doesn't exist after that for you or anyone else. And the next time you or anyone else goes to that location, the next piece of content is streamed. So that sort of infinite content, infinite world of work, you know, I'll probably return to that theme. And ephemeral content, I think, is key. And I'm toying with this idea of calling it multidimensional content, because we've gone from multilingual to multimodal. And then when you have this new dimension of time that's much more active than in the past, then you might call that something else. And so maybe it's multidimensional, when it's actually, you know, what kind of content, what is it? Multilingual? Is it multimodal? And you know, how many times per hour are you interacting with it, right? So it's more complex, which is really exciting.
Thank you for sharing that. Multidimensional, that's a concept we might want to continue exploring here, multilingual as well. Of course, as you came in as a CEO and as you're sharing these thoughts and these innovations with the clients, that they are giving you feedback, what has been the response so far?
So it's interesting. I think I talked a moment ago about my own insecurity about putting that video out. And I was probably a year into my role here. I would be much less insecure about putting that video out today, because, you know, I know the space much better. I spent now 3 years in it and speaking to lots and lots and lots of clients and up on stages and panels and getting reactions. And, you know, and so the feedback from customers is overwhelmingly positive, like for this vision, right? People, and not just customers, I've spoken to hyperscalers and content companies, content management companies. Like, there is a broad acceptance, I think, that the internet is going in this hyper automation, hyper personalization, hyper scale direction. The question, I think, is how far and how fast, and how and who wants to go first, and, you know, leaders and laggards. I think partners and customers all change at different rates. And ultimate phrase, we respect that. And I think we have a unique offering because of the breadth of our platform that actually allows people to find a home in it at different places. So we've got these, you know, bleeding edge AI capabilities around adapting content, even in a single language, to different audiences, doing that very rapidly, or doing very low latency adaptation and localization. And of course, we've got the kind of more, you know, we cater to the more, the less bleeding edge enterprise, or the less bleeding edge LSP, and everything in between. And then, you know, curiously, we're also starting to see new types of partners enter the space, content agencies, right? And how can we support them? And so we're learning on that front too, which is great fun.
And of course, there is a huge conversation that we see multilingual, as we also talk to those that purchase or acquire services or acquire technologies to orchestrate their content. And there is the huge conversation or the debate that we see on one-stop versus orchestrated localization solutions. How do you see this playing out, and where does this phrase fit in?
Yeah, so it's interesting, because when Slater did their LSI versus LTP thing, I stood at the back of the room cheering, and people wondered, who's that guy? And I was cheering because I'd stayed up you know, late into the, well, early into the morning reading this report and thought, finally, the language around the technology stack here has changed from this TMS catch-all to language technology platform. And actually, if you look back at our language, we've been talking about platform for years, and yet people came up to me and they said, are you okay with this? And I said, are you kidding me? I'm like, I was literally the guy cheering from the back. TMS is a subset of stuff that we do. And yet, you know, language is kind of sticky. So it's interesting when you phrase that question in terms of one-stop shop versus kind of orchestrated solutions. I don't know where, like if we asked 100 people where everyone would plot where Phrase is. So let me be really clear. We released Phrase Orchestrator in early 2023. So 2.5 years ago, we were the first to bring out a really powerful orchestration platform and a workflow tool. So we're massive believers in orchestration. We're massive believers in ultimately a platform, right? I don't sell individual products anymore. You cannot buy TMS from Phrase or Strings or something else from as an individual product from Phrase. You always buy the platform. That's been true for 2 years now. So the orchestrator layer allows you to pick and choose the capabilities that you need and put them into a workflow. So to compose them into a workflow according to your need. And then Phrase itself is like super API enabled, has been since its inception. We have a new developer hub. We have a whole new set of connector APIs we just released in our June cadence release. So, you know, it's a headless system as well, if you want it to be that. So there's a headless side of it. There's an orchestrated side of it. Now, I've talked about this ecosystem concept a lot. I see others in the market starting to pick up our language on that. So I'll just reclaim it because we definitely talked about it first. Certainly amongst the LTPs. And you know, the reason we're such strong believers in it is that we know from customer experience, we're not the only technology in that customer's ecosystem. So we do 30 plus events a year around the world, and we always do them in some combination, us, a technology partner, a services partner, and a customer. And so that, we call it a quadratic event, four parties. It's really important to tell that combined story. So, you know, ultimately, we have this very strong ecosystem view, and I don't believe at the moment that, let me put it another way, in the real world, as we all know, localization is done differently at every company. So in the real world, making a fully orchestrated approach where you have 25 different solutions and stitching them together through an orchestration layer has not yet been proven to work well at scale with the complexity that enterprises require. I think that it can get better, but at the moment, our view is that the future is not for enterprises and probably never will be for enterprises to sort of be a middleware layer themselves and then stitch together tons and tons of systems. We do think you need to have a platform where your core systems are in common, and then you can choose to extend and embrace from that core system into, you know, appropriate other solutions as you want. So that's our view. The platform that extends and embraces via orchestration across itself and that third-party ecosystem, rather than everything's going to go to like an octopus and a mess.
Thank you for sharing. And of course, the complexities grow even further when we start thinking about the day and age where we are at, where there is a huge explosion of content across formats, markets, and channels. How is Phrase evolving to support enterprise scale global content creation and delivery?
Yeah, I suppose the first thing to say is, like, when we say how's Phrase evolving to support it, I would just say we've been doing it for many years. So if you look at our customer base, it's absolutely extraordinary. You know, it is everything from foundation model providers that we can't name, but we all use every day, you know, and so we're taking their models, augmenting them, and then providing them back to that same foundation model provider, which is pretty interesting. Same for major MT providers like DeepL. You know, we've recently done some webinars together with DeepL, and they've also written a blog that we didn't know about, and we read it and thought it was great, about how DeepL accesses DeepL through Phrase, and then actually connects it with Zendesk as well for help desk translation. Then we... you know, we work with like many, many West Coast based technology businesses. We also, and they're very large and the use cases are very large. We work with e-commerce and retail, but we also work with manufacturing. So we're working with a number of different automotive providers and manufacturing companies. You know, these are not necessarily the most tech forward companies in every case. And yet they're moving away. And this is what's interesting. We're starting to see more and more people move, not just from a competitive solution to Phrase, but actually from never having localized before. from a, or having done it on a homegrown solution for many years. And that, what I put that down to is that good enough is no longer good enough. So what people have struggled along with for a long time doesn't work when the ambition level has raised, as it has done now with the advent of AI, of course, and executives are expecting their companies and their teams to go multilingual at launch in all markets and not to be waiting days, weeks, months for this to take place. So I think the ambition level is definitely rising. So, you know, in the product, of course, we have this platform approach with lots of components. We have the data layer, we have the API layer, we have our AI layer, critically our quality technologies, which we really lead the industry in. And, you know, you have to have those because it's not just about assessing the quality in a particular segment, but it's actually about then putting that together with orchestration and building sophisticated branching logics that can do very complicated things at scale. You know, we have one customer with an orchestration that has 24,000 steps in it in one workflow. That's unusual, but it's a sign of how it can scale. And it's probably 50 steps is a bit more typical, but you can scale the number of steps if you need to. And of course, now with multimedia, as the next layer, was one thing that's pretty interesting is as we've shown FreeStudio to lots and lots of customers, we're getting fantastic feedback. That product's pipeline has grown beyond our expectations. Just frankly, it's grown beyond our expectations for the year in the first 3 weeks. So it's been a great success. But the very consistent bit of feedback we get from enterprise customers is, please, can you do deeper integration to the rest of your platform? Which is, in a way, it's wonderful to hear because that's actually validating the value of the platform story of all of the other components then being surfaced in this new way. And then finally, you know, it's partners and ecosystem again. You know, the content agencies coming into play, and how can we work with partners who have specialisms and who can build either technologies or services that plug into the Phrase platform and extend what we're natively capable of to bring, you know, something valuable extra to the customer.
And of course, we have to agree with that idea that you mentioned, that good enough is no longer good enough. Do you see localization becoming more embedded in enterprise content operations as a driver of growth rather than just your support function?
I do. And it's interesting. Some of the recent conferences, you sort of hear mixed opinions on this. There's some folks in localization who, you know, still feel very much like they are that support function. But I see lots of examples in our customers where they are becoming growth enablers and the people running those teams are becoming more senior and they are reporting to people who are more senior. So we have more VPs of localization reporting to more C-suite members. Could be CMO, CPO, Chief Operating Officer, and different customers I can think of. One thing that is changing is I think that the budget is shifting from the allocation between technology and services. And you know, like all of the reports in this industry say that that is a shift that is happening and is going to happen more over the years. And obviously, Phrase will be a net beneficiary of that. We still think that there is a growing market here in which services companies can be very successful. And I need to continually be really clear about it. We see ourselves as enabling their success and being partners to them, not competing them into oblivion. There are technology companies in this space who see that as their role. And I have disagreed with the CEOs of those companies very strongly, like, they want to disappear the LSPs. I want the LSPs to be very successful and to build together with Phrase. Like, I have to be really clear about that.
Thank you. So you talked slightly a bit about the changes on terminologies when you were at the Slater. A TMS today is not just a TMS. It's part of this the ecosystem. We're talking to your CPO and you know, we have a holistic view of that. How is localization technology transforming and what should today's enterprises expect from their language tech?
Yeah, I think the Slater report was helpful in that it has really reframed the language that people use. Now, TMS was a shorthand, really. If you said to an enterprise customer, are you using a TMS? Yes. Are you using a workflow tool of some kind? Yes. Are you using MT? Yes. Are you using some sort of quality assessment? Yes. So they were kind of using all these things somewhere, you know, in whatever stack they were using. But they were often just sort of waving a TMS sort of, or putting a TMS label on it all. But I didn't think it was particularly helpful because it still anchors people in like an older way of working and an older way of thinking. And actually, the ambition level is much broader for language technology platforms. And they will enable different business models as well for the LSIs, because the TMS is ultimately a workflow productivity tool for people, whereas a language technology platform. So the ultimate goal of a TMS at some level is to make a person 5 or 10% more productive every year, right? Whereas an LTP is ultimately, the goal is to make the enterprise 10,000% more productive. So, you know, that's my objective. It's not about making a human somewhere 5 or 10% more productive here or there. It's about driving hyper-automation, hyper-scale. So the question, I think, the answer to your question about what enterprises should expect is that they should expect LTPs to help them address their business goals. And the business goals are not, you know, 5 or 10% productivity improvement here or there. They are, how do I personalize my message to 10,000 different personas, or a persona for every single customer I have? And how do I deliver real-time content to people at scale? Because what I want is conversion rates. I want engagement with my content. I want, you know, basket completion. Those are the things I want. I want to be able to hire people in their native language in all the countries that I operate in, so I reduce my cost to hire. Like, that's what an LTP should deliver for an enterprise.
Of course, in this whole conversation about technology, off the record, we're talking about humans and the ecosystem. What do you see that conversation, the human elements remaining central in localization? How do you see the expertise evolving alongside technology and AI?
Yeah. So I think I did say earlier that I was a techno-optimist. So obviously with that, like, disclaimer, I still think it's just true that every technological leap has always led to people saying, well, this is the end of, you know, humans doing that kind of work or that kind of work or that kind of work. And in the end, the question of whether or not humans are needed or all the work is going to be done by machines, I think actually depends on the nature of the work. So it's only true if there's actually a finite amount of work available to do. If you were tilling the fields, you know, there are only so many fields, right? So if you are a human hand tilling the fields, at some point a machine can replace that work, maybe with a new skill set, which is driving the machinery. And then at some point, and I was watching for the English viewers here, Clarkson's farm recently, and he has a new GPS-enabled tractor where it drives in straight lines because he's not able to. And, you know, so you see that automation creeps in, you know, to sort of the final 0.0111%, right? In the end, automation happens in these areas of finite work because there are only so many fields. But then what's your next layer of productivity? Well, maybe there are new ways to get more harvest out of that field. Can you have drought-resistant crops? Can you have disease-resistant crops? Can you have new ways of making the soil more fertile? I mean, I'm not like a farmer. I should stop the analogy there. But let me use a different one. I often talk about finite and infinite work in terms of lawyers, right? My wife's a lawyer. And I kid her sometimes that there are only so many revisions lawyers can make to a contract, no matter how they try. And so machines are going to automate, you know, large components of that. Now, let's get on to the infinite work. Software development is infinite work, right? There is no limit to imagination and creativity and how many beta tests you can run and how many prototypes you can create. And the wonderful thing there is that now we're all developers using Replit and Lovable and other tools to actually create these extraordinary, you know, interactive demonstrations, and then sort of handing it over to the real engineers to say, can you bring this to life? So there is infinite amount of work in that kind of creative space, and language sits it firmly in that space. If people sometimes say to me, well, who's going to consume all this content? Well, if it's ephemeral, we are, because it's not like, if I produce a piece of content for you and then it disappears, then the next time it's streamed down to you again, that is a new piece of content, right? And so if you take all the website visits by all of the people to all of the websites, that is a huge proliferation of content relative to where we are today. So I don't worry so much about there not being enough work to do. So then it's about humans being augmented by machines to be able to do new kinds of work and be more productive and find new customers for our businesses that we didn't have before, and actually offer them new services that we didn't have before. So look, ultimately we have this saying, phrase, that unlocking language unlocks opportunity. And I think this is like a great kind of connection to the infinite work concept, actually. So if you unlock that language, then you have an infinite opportunity space that we should go after.
Right, Georg, I have to admit that I have not watched your video. So after this, I'm going to go ahead and watch it. But how do you see the localization and content tech landscape evolving over the next few years? And what role is Phrase going to play in it?
Yeah. Well, I talked a bit earlier about different business models as well. And we were just touching on the role of humans. So, for example, I think that as machines get better, then the incremental quality concern on an incremental segment, you know, will decrease because we'll go from, you know, confidence levels being 95%, 99%, 3 nines, 4 nines, 5 nines. And in the end, we'll be able to say, you know, if we pick a segment out of a hat, we can be relatively confident that that segment is going to be high quality in terms of its translation. But of course, as we said earlier, when those confidence thresholds turn on those new AI-enabled use cases, then volumes go up dramatically. So small percentages of large volumes are still meaningfully large errors. And machines may produce content quickly, but they certainly propagate it very quickly as well. So I think there's a business model shift where the humans get involved in addressing these risks. And so whilst the percentage of human involvement may drop, the absolute amount may actually increase over time. But that's a different business model from the LSI, LSP business model today for at least that kind of work. So I think we'll see that change. I think also this massively automated real-time ephemeral content, I was trying to find a way to make it sound like massively multiplayer online role-playing game, but I struggled. But yeah, massively automated real-time ephemeral content. I'm not sure that'll catch on as fast as multidimensional content. I think that is the future. So kind of scale, latency, adaptation, on the fly, very sophisticated quality, of course. Like we know in this industry, it's not black and white quality, but getting even more granular and getting that quality absolutely right. You know, if you... that's a good example. I mean, take personal relationships, right? How easy it, like I've made this joke before. I had a long distance relationship once. It struggled because it was all over email because that was 20 years ago. And how easy is it to misread written communications right now? Thankfully, although that woman broke up with me, we got back together again 9 months later and 20 years later, we have 3 kids and a dog and a house. So, you know, it ends well, but written communications are easily misinterpreted, you know, at a distance. And we live in an async world, lots of Slack and so on. So quality sophistication, getting that, what might be the right way of communicating with you could be very different from the right way of communicating with me. So quality sophistication, we're at the bottom of an S-curve around quality, the bottom of an S-curve around volume, the bottom of an S-curve around personalization. So I think what's hard for people to imagine is what a kind of exponential really looks like and feels like. Because if you say to people it'll be double next year, they can imagine that. But if you say it's 10x next year, they can imagine that. But if you say it's 10x next year and 100x the year after, they can't imagine that. And then again, right? So I think we're at the bottom of an S-curve, which would be really exciting to contribute to.
I loved when you said that you are an optimist. And I assume that also trickles down to the entire phrase structure. What should we be excited about when it comes to Phrase's future?
Yeah, I think kind of an all of the above, right? Answer to that. I think we'll see a very different landscape over the next 5 to 10 years of content consumption in our personal lives and our professional lives. And the role that we all play interacting with technology is transforming very quickly. But we really are at the bottom of this S-curve. When now non-technical people can speak to their computers to generate software, it's really quite exciting. So I think all of the above, we as a company, as I said, combine humility with ambition and optimism, massive drive for improvement, self, team and company, but also enormous passion for our customers and sort of doing the right thing by them. I think we have the privilege of attracting talent from across the industry and outside the industry. So I think, you know, people should be excited about Phrase's continued commitment to innovation and really trying to lead, you know, from the front with that enterprise focus in mind, but really to be a leading innovation company. And then as I was thinking about this this question earlier, I was reminded of this quote by a guy called Larry Tesler, but I looked it up last night and he claims he never said it. But the quote is that AI is whatever hasn't been done yet. And I think there's something inspiring about that. You know, there's another quote now I'm trying to remember this on the fly, but it's something around magic and engineering, something to do with like engineering is just, or magic is just what science hasn't understood yet, and engineering is just, you know, the real application of science. I have totally butchered that quote. But somehow, you know, if you think about when ChatGPT came out and I was demonstrating it to like friends at parties, and I said, look, this thing can write romantic couplets and Shakespearean's, you know, pentameter or whatever the right phrase is. And that was a party trick. ChatGPT was a party trick. And now it's, you know, every single person at Phrase has access. We trained a whole company. We gave everyone access like really early on in early 23. And so now what people are, sorry, is that right? In early 23. Yeah, that's right. And like, and now people are building those incredible things, and it's table stakes. So what is going to be table stakes in 5 years' time? Like, I don't know. It's exciting.
Thank you. And I know this question is not there. We can choose not to include it. But those of us that are working in global content strategy and enterprises and leaders that are working in global content strategy, from your perspective, what do you think they should be thinking about in this context?
How do you excite and enthuse your workforce to embrace these technologies and be early on the S-curve? Because the thing about the exponentials is that at the early stages, it might look like your competitor is just slightly ahead of you. But as they move up the S-curve, that gap widens. And so whether the competitor here is, you know, the employee at another company who might apply for a role in my company, but who is AI native and I'm refusing to embrace. So now my rate of improvement is 10 to 20% per year, but this other person's rate of improvement might be 2x per year or 5x per year, right? So that might be my competitor as an individual contributor, and I include myself in this, right? I need to be an AI-enabled CEO, and I need to be working with these tools day in, day out. And the same is true for all of my C-suite, and they work with these tools day in, day out. And all the way through our organization, we need to be AI native. So I think, how do you get as a leader, to your question, how do you get your organization to embrace these changes and get up the S-curve early? I remember a few years ago talking at Phrase about the compounding interests of good and bad decisions. And, you know, you've got to make these decisions early. There's a saying I love to quote, when's the best time to plant a tree? 20 years ago, the second best time today. So everyone should start planting AI trees today if they haven't already, and not wait. So that's probably the first and most important thing to say.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Kurt, I don't have any more questions. I don't know if you have any final thoughts before we go.
No, I'm just grateful for the time. Thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. And this was our conversation with Georg Eldt, CEO of Phrase. My name is Eddie Arrieta, CEO here at Multilingual Magazine. Georg, thank you so much for your time.